Soul Talk is a podcast dedicated to making space for Latinx storytellers and content creators across all media to chat about their art, experiences, and culture. As a branch of the Soul Project, Soul Talk welcomes you to the green room.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Soul Talk. My name is Joey Reyes. My pronouns are they, them, and I'm the associate producer at the Soul Project. And joining me again here is...
I'm David Mendizabal. I'm the associate artistic director of the Soul Project. I use he or they pronouns. I missed you all last episode with Daphne, but I'm so excited to be back here in 2022 for our first episode of this year, but not our first episode of this season, because we still have a couple more. We've got not one, but two really exciting guests that we're going to get to talk with.
Yes, really, really quick. I'm going to share this little co-bio that we have here for Lorena Diaz and Wendy Mateo. They are a multi-hyphenated Jefa comedy duo who have enjoyed their creative partnership for more than 20 years. They co-founded with six other partners their own content creation studio, Chicago For Real, and co-host their live stream show, Bochinche at Night, on the studio's Twitch channel. They've co-written and directed several films, including Good Mothers, which was an official selection of HBO New York Latino Film Festival and the Chicago Latino Film Festival. Sunset 1919, written by J. Nicole Brooks in collaboration with Looking Glass Theater, and Identified, produced by Full Spectrum Features. As Dominizuelan, they've performed nationally for years and pursued several independent projects, including co-writing and starring in the comedy web series Dominizuelan Consulate, created in collaboration with Fred Armisen, producer-director Alice Matias, I hope I'm saying that correctly, and Mas Mejor Productions. Diaz and Mateo succeed previous Teatro Vista artistic directors Ricardo Gutierrez, Eddie Torres, and Henry Godinez, and Ernie Torres, who co-founded the company in 1990. Not only have two Latinas ascended to the role of co-artistic director, Teatro Vista will return to live production in the 21-22 season with a predominantly Latina-led executive leadership team, including board president Adela Cepeda and managing director Silvia Lopez. Ooh, really exciting.
Amazing.
Oh my gosh.
Amazing. Yeah. Such an exciting, I think such an exciting moment for Latino theater, for the theater field, for Chicago. Mm-hmm. You know, there's definitely been this like push towards, you know, having more conversations around shared leadership. And I think, you know, it was thrilling to hear that announcement, especially for a company that's been around for almost over 30 years. Has been sort of led predominantly, historically led all by men, and to sort of have this changing tide come with shared leadership and come with two artists who have been doing the work really all over and building community, and for that to be the next chapter of Teatro Vista, which is such an incredible organization in our field. So it's thrilling, and I am so excited to just, you know, I know Wendy more than I know Lorena, but I was recently in Chicago and I got to meet Lorena and got to see them, and they are truly just this incredible duo. Like, they bounce off each other and they have this wonderful energy, and I'm so excited to see what they're gonna do at Teatro Vista and beyond.
I'm very excited to meet them later this year.
Oh, yes. They're going to be your new neighbors.
Yes. Yes. First, I mean, okay, before I get to that, Happy New Year, everybody. We probably should have started
happy
with
Happy New
that.
Year, indeed.
2022 is off with a bang, so to speak, in so many
many ways,
good and bad. But we are recording this just a week after I received news that I have been accepted to grad school. I'll be starting starting the journey to earn my master's degree this fall at Northwestern Ooh. University.
She educated, y'all.
Well, she will be. I'm excited and I'm also terrified. You know, I just, you know, you just, it's, there's just like uncertainty, but I'm trying to like embrace that uncertainty. Yeah. But I'm also very excited to move to Chicago and meet all these, which I've visited multiple times now and I love. It's a,
I hope you have a warm coat.
Yes. Yes. I'm going to invest into more warm coats, warmer than the ones I have now, having lived on the East Coast for the last few mm-hmm. years. It's even cold. Well, the very first time I visited Chicago was in January of 2019. So I know how cold it gets already because I ended up getting stuck in quotes, but I ended up staying for 2 extra days because the day I was supposed to fly back to New York, we got snowed in. There was a storm. So I know, again, I kind of have an idea of what to expect. Yay. That's
so exciting. Congrats.
How are you? How are your holidays?
Oh, you know, holiday full. I'm great. Things are good. You know, as you said, 2022 is starting out with a bang and a variety of reasons. You know, we continue to adapt. We are still deeply in a global mm-hmm. pandemic and deeply navigating the shifting of systems in our field. And you know, we adapt, we push forward, and we challenge what wasn't working, and we continue to create the field that we want and the world that we want, right? Mm-hmm. One day at a time.
One day at a time, for sure. And Lord knows that we need joy along the way. So we thank you so much for listening. We're super excited for you to listen to this interview because there was plenty of joy in it. So stay tuned and we will be right back with Lorena Diaz and Wendy Mateo. Hello, everyone. Welcome back. We're here with our amazing guests. Welcome, Wendy and Lorena. How are you?
Hi.
We are so excited that, you know, we can finally get this happening. Happy New Year. If we
happy
can still
New
say
Year,
Happy New Year.
All.
We still right? can. I think yes. all through January. You
I
can
feel
say
like,
it.
Exactly. Don't give up yet. I feel like 2022. New Year's will begin in February, right? So we are here. We are met. We are so thrilled to be chatting with y'all. How just as a general check-in, we love to start. It's like, how are y'all doing? How is Chicago treating you in January 22? You know, how are things?
It's like a little bit un poquito de todo, you know, it's like a lot of everything. It's a lot of great things. It's a lot of not great things. Mm-hmm. As new co-artistic directors, we're gearing up for our first live in-person production in the spring. So it's all of the excitement and the nervousness and overwhelming things that come with that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's about right. It's there's been a lot of really cool things that have been happening. Cool things that have come out of the pandemic, and then learning curves, of course, and then dealing with just the world as it is, and men, a lot of dealing with men things.
Speak on it.
You know, so but we're learning to hold our own in the room, and I'm excited about that.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, as you said, Wendy, you know, the new co-artistic directors, major congratulations. Mm-hmm. You know, I know I had a chance to talk to you both in Chicago when I was out there and say it in person, but just again, like, real congratulations. I think what an exciting step for the field, what an exciting step for our community, you know, taking over a theater that, as you know, as we know, and in a community that has a very strong sort of patriarchal stronghold, and to be doing mm-hmm. it in a shared structure, I think, which it's really like become this kind of buzzword in the industry, you know, this idea of like shared leadership, you know, it's like everyone wants it, but no one really knows what it is. Right. And so I think y'all's announcement was one of the first really that we got to see, like, it's possible. And what a big change for Teatro Vista, and what a gift for the city of Chicago and for all of us in the field. And, you know, I would love to hear from y'all what that was like, sort of being like, no, you know what, we're going to bring in something new. We're going to talk to you about shared leadership, and this is what it means for us.
Well, it's, I you know, a lot of it is rooted in the fact that Lori and I can't get enough of each other. So we, you know, our history is that we've been friends for 20 years. So we've always been in such somewhat of a shared leadership in our own independent projects and how we came up in the art. And when it came to Teatro Vista, we were approached, you know, separately from the search committee about applying for the role. And I was like, no, I'll see you later. And Lorena was like, she was like, let's do this together. And I was like, ooh, yeah, that's a pitch.
I think so. I said, if not now, when? Yeah. Because we're going to be too tired.
Yeah.
So this is like exactly the right time for this kind of thing. And Teatro Vista, you know, I don't know. So the shared leadership you're asking about is like the fact that Wendy and I are doing this together, right? Because in my mind, like, I feel like the whole company is in the shared leadership mentality, in that they've entrusted us to be like their overall big picture leaders and the day-to-day, you know, operations leaders. But I feel like the ensemble as a whole has, you know, it's a 30-year-old company. A lot of them have been there about that long, if not almost that long. And they bring a lot of talent and skill sets to the table. So it's just really, I think as a good leader identifies the skill sets of the people around them and then fits them into roles where they can kind of drive that within the company and then invests in their education to learn more about it, you know, gives them a place to come and, you know, give constructive criticism about maybe what we could be doing better and just make it work better. And in that way, Wendy and I have always been really studious about that. We always wanted to get better at whatever it is that we were doing because we didn't really have a choice. We kind of had to figure out how to do it on our own. And we learned that we had the most ownership over things when we learned to do it ourselves. So we brought that thinking into the company and they really dug that because they hadn't, I think the intention was there to have that from go, but it's hard to let go, especially back then when theater companies were like scraping it together, like Teatro Vista, to make it happen. Eddie Torres, the, you know, founding member of the company, one of them, and the one that really did the bulk of the work of putting the company together at the beginning, did express that it was difficult to let go of those reins because you spend so much time learning it. And so now you're in this place where you start seeing, you know, the opportunity and using those people around you. And it made a lot of sense because it's a massive job. It's massive.
Absolutely.
I don't even know how anybody does it on their own. I'm like,
who does it on their own?
Why?
Well, I think that's the myth that anyone does do it on their own. And I love, Lorena, that you make that distinction of there's actually layers of shared leadership happening. Yes, there is this sort of visual two co-artistic directors, and that is a version of a shared leadership. But I love what you're talking about is it's actually a value that needs to be embraced by the entire organization. And how does that trickle down throughout, do you know? And so just that distinction of like, yes, there is this version of shared leadership, but actually it's about getting the whole company on board and getting everyone on board to understand that it's not just about, okay, now there's two people doing the job. No, it's actually about, we are all in this together, yes, figuring this out. And we're here to sort of guide the conversation from our experience, but that everyone has that leadership to offer. And I love that distinction, because I definitely think, you know, when we're talking about the future of the field, like that is the direction. You know, it's not like, let's just collect a lot of figureheads, right? It's actually like, how are we interrogating the systems, you know? So I love that. And, you know, thinking about future, you know, you've announced your season, and it's the season of futurology. Mm-hmm. And I'd love to hear more about that too. Like, as you're sort of, you know, here we are, beginning of 22, we're manifesting the future. What was that conversation for you of what you wanted to sort of come out the park, you know, the park with, or whatever that expression is?
Pre-pandemic, Wendy and I always saw theater existing in this way, but people weren't ready for that, right? We were actually rolling with some artists that were thinking in this way, like Joe Cattell. We were working with Joe Cattell a lot, and Joe Cattell's brain works in that way of like, how do we take theater outside of the walls of the theater? But Wendy and I love the theater, and we love film, and we just think that it can exist in so many different ways, and you can use the tenets of theater, of creating with one another and in a room, in a workshop, and then bring that out into film, because it only makes it better. We studied one of my favorite movies is American Beauty, and that director rehearsed American Beauty for I think a month before they started filming. And I just remember feeling like these characters are so fully developed, and they have such a good point of view, and everything was so nuanced and beautiful. And it's like, why do we have to shoot film in such a separate way? The script gets made, and then the actors get brought to the stage, and then, you know, people work together on the day that they're filming. It just seems so backwards. Anyway, the pandemic hit, and then we were all forced into creating like that.
Yeah.
And the audiences adapted. Of course they did. And then we were like, okay, let's pitch this as a way forward. And people were already doing stuff like this in the company, right, Wendy? Like, they were already.
Yeah. Yeah. People were working sort of in their silos, sort of working in that direction. And a lot of what drew the ensemble to us is our history of like content creation in a lot of different ways. And so they were excited about what that possibility could be. And so were we. We didn't know exactly what it would look like, but we knew that it was possible. And, you know, I do a lot of work in equity and diversity and inclusion in corporate spaces, but I always thought about that idea of accessibility and like, how do we make theater accessible? You know, it gets to a point where, yeah, we all strive to make this beautiful quality, high quality production and get all the, you know, foundation money or whatever, and, you know, the donor money and make this beautiful thing. But then we have to charge upwards of $60, you know, dollars to $100 for folks to be able to even access it, and forget about Broadway. Like, that's not even
right.
A possibility. Like, I grew up in the Bronx, and like the amount of times I went to Broadway, I can count on one hand, you know. So
we all listened to Hamilton on Spotify first.
We all did. You know what I mean? We all did it.
My people of color, we were on Spotify.
We was on
listening
there.
To Hamilton.
Yeah. So it's like, you know, how do we create that accessibility for those future generations, especially in the pandemic? Like, now we can't take our shows and go to schools and, you know, like all of our stories. Like, I saw the flamenco people come to my school, and that was it. Like, I knew it. I knew that I wanted to do performance, but that's not even a possibility anymore. So how do we create ways in which the younger generation can engage with the art and meet them where they're at, instead of forcing them into...
Technology is moving there too, you know, with the Oculus and things like this coming out. Like, it's, we should be thinking bigger in that way. I do want to say this so it doesn't get missed. You know, Wendy and I would, if you read some of these job, like the job descriptions, or like the requirements to apply for roles like this for an artistic director, it would be very easy for people to become very intimidated about doing it. Like, you need a college degree, you need and you have to have paid $1 million. And it's just nuts. Like, I would have never applied.
other than knowing that we were doing it together. And so sink or swim together, like the Thelma and Louise, we're going to go off the mountain and die together. So might as well just jump. Not everybody has that. People are typically on their own. And I would encourage like institutions to stop that nonsense of being like, they have to have a master's in communications. They have to have business, because people, especially Latinos, we are out here striving for it, but we don't always come from families that can afford the privilege of college and the privilege of university, or we don't want to be in debt for the rest of our lives to have it. And there's real world experience that was had out there for both of us, and programs that we took on our own, and think, you know, that prepared us for this kind of position. And thank goodness that Teatro Vista didn't have that listed, or we wouldn't have come to the table.
It's a barrier to entry. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think, you know, in talking about accessibility, you know, there's financial accessibility in terms of coming to see the show, but this is another kind of gatekeeping that happens, especially in these positions where it's like, we want radically new ideas, but we want you to have been doing it for the last 15 years. And it's like, that's an oxymoron, right?
Right.
Like it's like, how? And there is something so fresh and exciting about, as you said, this sort of real world experience, the sort of real kind of advocacy and leadership and content creation and sort of a fusion of forms that you've been able to do, and to now bring to an organization that has such a long history, that has such a deep well of talent, and a company of artists who are also like, what else can we do? Right.
They're super ready. And it's a big part of what Wendy and I talk about is like, the artists are out there, right? But what they don't always know how to do is the business of their art.
Totally.
And we're so focused on that angle of it. Wendy and I, and then the core group of people working in operations and in Teatro Vista right now. And it's like figuring out how to bring that education to them, or how to like invest in that thinking for them, so that they're opening up LLCs and they're understanding how that works and how they can write off the things that they do day to day on their taxes. And, you know, nobody teaches you that. And we also came from a place of industry experience. Like, we've been in those rooms, we've sat at those tables, we've been screwed by those people. Like, we know what that looks like. And if I had spent my life in a college, not to diminish that experience of college education, you know, but if I had done that, I wouldn't have been at those tables. And so I can come back now and be like, no, our belief is that artists of color are just perfect as they are. They don't need to change the way they write or create or do their thing to fit any kind of mainstream narrative. We are mainstream, and we just have to, you know, have the tools in place in order to grow and get our material out there. And we can totally do it. But yeah, that's a big focus for us.
Yeah, Wendy's especially got in some this time.
Ideas.
Well, it's especially in this time, right? Like, you know, sometimes too, in these organizations, 501c3, they separate us. Like, are you here for the artist, or are you here for the community? And you have to be one of those and choose one of those streams of creating. And I'm like, well, why does that have to live separately? And how can we use the resources that we have, grow our skill set, so that it does trickle out into the community? And next thing you know, we're coalition building, and we're holding hands, and we're bringing folks from the community into these roles. You know, we have an incredible ensemble. Like, for example, Marvin Quijada is someone who has just been creating just beautiful work and has a really unique skill set as a performer, physical performer, creates his own music, all of this kind of stuff. And he takes one idea that he's been working on for like, what, 8 years? Detective Q has been, it's been out there that he's been working on with Gabe for a really long time, that they would do on stage as this sort of vaudeville meets noir kind of work. And in the pandemic, he just started playing around with apps on his iPad and starting to figure out different ways in which to express Detective Q. And now we're in that's part of our programming is a moving graphic novel
right.
that he's created with the resource that he has at his fingertips, which is right. on his phone and on his device. And what if we shared that with the young generation? What if we said you can create something like this with the thing that's already hanging out in your pocket?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And you can still think of it as theater, right? And
yeah.
that there's not this distinction that that's not the thing that happens in the room with the stuffy white people, right?
Right.
It's like, no, that's actually, there is a space of possibility of reinvention, of expansion of form that is more exciting than a Zoom reading, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, Detective Q will eventually become an immersive experience. And also, don't tell me what theater is. Don't tell me what theater is.
Absolutely.
I will tell you, I'm an artist. They're artists. My ensemble is, they're artists and artists create. And we're not going to live in these little parameters that are made for us. It's just not going to be. We're going to do it the way we want. We're going to make it the way we want. We're going to own it. We're going to teach them how to run their business. And then they're going to go out there. They're going to get those jobs. They're going to get in those rooms and they're going to turn around and they're going to yank the next person up. It's the only way we're going to get that representation in the room. Only
Absolutely.
Way.
Absolutely. Yeah.
In terms of, you know, you mentioned the beauty of fellowship and obviously with Teatro Vista, the ensemble model of working together in collaboration. I'm also wondering too, particularly in Chicago, it's such a really interesting time because of the amount of changing leadership that is happening with Audrey Francis and Glenn Davis at Steppenwolf, Ken Matt Martin at Victory Gardens. Uh-huh. The Goodman is going to be getting the new artistic director, I think this year. Regina Victor at Sideshow. Like, I'm wondering, is there like some sort of like conversation or buzz that's starting to happen, particularly in the community of like leaders reaching out to each other and creating fellowship and seeing how you can exchange information, support each other with your ideas or, you know, maybe even co-productions, you know, stuff like that. And obviously there's so many more other theaters in Chicago, you know, that's just a few people, but I know there's plenty more leadership that is changing there too. Is that conversation happening? And if so, like, what is it sounding like right now?
Oh my God, it's beautiful. It's totally happening.
Yeah, it's totally happening. We've been reaching out to each other and we haven't been the only one. I mean, as soon as Lori and I got on, we're like, hello, can anybody help? You know, So we reached out to folks that we knew. And then now it's been broadening to this beautiful, just collective of folks who are out there like Ken Matt Martin is an incredible advocate, accomplice, just amplifier of everything that we're doing and supporter of Teatro Vista for sure. But as to us as well as leaders. And so we've been connecting. Audrey Francis and Glenn Davis reached out. You know, we have a lot of folks who have been connecting and we've all been just being very truthful and honest about what we need and about what we may be going through. You know, we all have a little bit different challenges, right? Like Ken Matt Martin is taking over a theater that was historically white led before Chayu and, you know, and Glenn Davis and Audrey Francis as well. And so they're going to be facing some different challenges as people of color coming up in that institution, but it doesn't mean that they don't need any less support from the leaders in the community. We have been, you know, we were Black Latino founded and led for a long time. And, but we face different challenges, right? With the patriarchy. So so those are all things that different challenges that we're facing and everyone has a different skill set to offer and, you know, suggestions, advice, guidance from their own experience.
And we've been here a while. I mean, a lot of these artistic directors that have stepped in new, they've been here and they've seen how this old model hasn't done it. It hasn't done it.
Yeah.
And there's so many of us that are just like, our heart has been broken in the Chicago theater community. We've been like totally let down, totally disheartened with the way that things have been managed or run or the way conversations have been held. It's been like a rotten thing. And we're not trying to say, hey, we're going to fix it, but we are saying, we're tired of that and we need one another to move forward. And just that the seed of that thinking is enough to get us at the table together and figuring out how we can help one another. Yeah. It's a tough job. You're always running in different directions. You don't always have the time to stop. But I think the fundamental shift is that we're ready to make family out of one another.
Yeah.
For good, for bad, for ugly. We had a meeting recently where we were just like, people were in the room like, hey, I might have hurt you. I might have done something stupid in the past. I may have taken up too much, whatever the thing is. But I want to move forward with you. Like, we want to move forward together, whatever that is, and are willing to do that work. So just that alone has been kind of a nice energy in the air. And people are being honest too. Like, they're not trying to posture. It doesn't feel like they're just like, hey, I don't know. Or, hey, I'm having a rough time, or I need help. I need support. I need to be seen. And we're just there.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I feel like this also adds to like another level of, in talking about shared leadership, is it's like that sharing across companies, you know. And I do think that is a real shift also, just in this particular, you know, 2 years plus that we are, you know, continuing in conversations around reckoning and reflection in our field and in our world, and sort of shifting from a sort of scarcity, like we're all competing mentality, to actually a mentality of abundance where we can have these conversations. And I think that's been one of the, you know, dare I say, gifts of this time, mm-hmm. and of us all, like actually just starting to talk to each other, you know, mm-hmm. to engage and to get to understand what is happening at each other's theaters. How are we all interconnected? You know, we were all affected. Big, small, community, corporate, commercial, like all of it, you know, we were also deeply affected. And the way of getting not out of this moment, but the way of getting through this and also evolving the field is going to be about that communication and that conversation. And it's thrilling. You know, I think one of the things that we've been experiencing and talking about in New York specifically, and in, you know, specifically in the Latine community in New York, has been a historical and in BIPOC theaters, you know, has been historically sort of fragmented relationships, you know, and sort of relationship buildings that needs to happen, and some of that internal work that we all need to be doing, mm-hmm. you know, talking about the patriarchy, talking about our own anti-Blackness, talking about, you know, ageism, sizeism, all of these things, and how they manifest, and it's really about being able to sort of all come to the table, reach across the table and say, I'm here to listen to what you're navigating, because actually what I want to have this real sense of community, like you said, a real sense of family, and to, you know, undo some of those legacies of trauma and of, like you said, being let down, you know, and that doesn't happen overnight.
It does not.
It is.
People need to talk. If people need to talk to each other, you know, I was just having a conversation today with a sound designer about the real like work it takes. He's like, well, you know, if you think about leading up to tech and you put tech together with the prep before and the prep after, you're talking about 120 hours. So now break your stipend down and tell me how much that is hourly. And it was barely scratching the surface of a minimum wage. And so then you're like, damn, why aren't these people, they weren't talking before, you know, like we always like accepted that this was the way. And I'm like, who made up these numbers in Chicago? Like who made up that this is the way that we were going to function? And no one was actually talking directly to the artists, and no one was talking to the other theater communities, because that idea of scarcity that you're talking about, that idea of scarcity and coming from a place of abundance has been what has driven our purpose in taking over Teatro Vista. We always come, Lori always talks about the currency of joy, right? Joy is your currency. And how, but what does that look like then, right? There is plenty of room for all of us. And if we don't start talking to each other, we are going to keep perpetuating the systems that we were brought into, even if we are Black, Indigenous people of color, you know?
Because we think we need to. We think that there's some kind of like, we have to earn our stripes through going through horrible things.
Totally.
And because that's what everybody's done before you. And that's just bullshit. And that's where we talk about joy. We're like very easy, like barometer of like, if you're in the right place or not is, am I experiencing joy in this place? If yeah. you're not, if most of your experience in that place is a lack of joy, then you need to get the hell out of there, because here's what happens most of all the time. What happens is that place will ruin you and it will stop you from pursuing this for like anywhere between a year to 5 years. It will just annihilate any kind of drive you have to stay at that theater or to stay in theater at all. And that's not worth it. That's not worth the stripes. And in the end, nobody cares. Nobody cares that you worked at Goodman for five years in the front desk and worked your way up. And now you do photocopies and you've been in the room with Bob Falls. No one cares. So you might as well just find your joy in the spaces that you're in and make sure that you stick there, because that's where you're going to grow. That's where you're going to find your people. And that's going to be the fastest way for you to know when you got to get out.
Yeah.
People are abusive as hell, man. You got to watch them. Yeah. You got to watch these people.
I'm watching you. Oh,
and you don't break it overnight either. Like, I know that when we came into the company, Wendy and I were like, we want to hear from you. We want to know from you. We want to know what you want to do for right. the next 5 years. We want to know what you want to do for the next 2 years. We want to know how we can facilitate that. We want to know what you think you want to do, but don't think you can do. We want to know that too, because we're going to tell you how you're going to do it. And even with giving people all this permission, if they've been in a space of like not being able to do that for a decade or more, they're not going to know how to do it overnight. So it takes an incredible amount of patience to be like, well, I said that you can talk to me. I said that you can say that. And now you didn't. Why didn't you? Well, they're not necessarily used to having that. Just because I said so doesn't mean it makes it so. People have a process in that too. And you have to be patient.
Yeah. I think part of that patience includes also being okay with potentially not reaping the benefits of the seeds that you sow, that you're like planting seeds. You know, we talk about often like thinking 7 generations ahead. Like if you're planting seeds now, you know, that you might not even see that tree even like grow to its full potential within your time, wherever you are or in this lifetime, but you know that you're setting something up for future generations so that they're not having to deal with the same bullshit that you were dealing with.
It becomes so important. It really does. And now like turning 40, that was a big marker for me to be like, what am I doing for others? Like, where am I leaving that path? And it can't just be by me doing it. That's not enough. Yeah. And that's where I turned to Wendy and I was like, we can do this now. Like we can do this right now and do this for the next 10 to 15 years and really try and make it different. And be intentional about it and learn and learn and learn and learn and learn. Cause you know, if you're not learning, you're dying. So you might as well just like pick the thing that's going to continue to juice you. And this was such a nice opportunity to do that. We did work for ourselves for a long time, trying to reach that definition of success for us, but we kept looking around for those leaders and we didn't find them. And then those that we thought were going to be leaders for us, we learned were not there for that. They were there for themselves. And that was how they learned. And I'm not saying it's right or wrong. It just wasn't there for us. And so we hit that place where we were like, oh, it's
we
us.
We gotta do it.
Yeah. We gotta be.
Yeah.
I bet
yeah.
she's told people. Me 5 years when she pitched me the thing, and now it's.
I know she said 10, 15, you know.
I'm just look. I'm preparing for everything.
I think one of the things, you know, that I love so much about all sorts of arts, really. Also, I mean, life is, you know, collaborations are the creative relationships, right? And I'm just curious, you know, in what glorious values-based artistic Tinder world did the two of you find each other 20 years ago? Like, I'm just like, how, this is like such, it's just what a beautiful marriage here, you know, of 20 years in the making. And yeah, how did y'all meet? Like, I'm curious, how did y'all meet? Where did this all begin?
Let me see if I can find a picture for you.
the story.
We met in Hollywood, Florida. I was working, I was running the front desk of an acting school in Hollywood, Florida. It was called the Acting Studio of South Florida. And Wendy came in wanting to take classes. And I needed to sell classes. And so that's how we got to talking. But she was, as she is today, incredibly ambitious, incredibly driven, was going to learn the thing at all costs. And I don't really, like, I don't know what happened from that meeting to living together. It happened very quickly. but we ended up like doing improv together in South Florida. Like I think I was your coach of the team. Yeah.
You were the one who, yeah, you convinced me to do improv. I was like, I need to audit the acting class because I'm
a serious actress.
Yes. Latina Meryl Streep. And she was like, there was like a couple of weeks later, she was like, you're funny. And I'm like, what? Wow. And she's like, you should do improv. And I was like, without a script. And she convinced me.
She had a lot of joy and it's infectious. Wendy's like she's a social butterfly. She likes people. I was a horrible introvert in many ways. I still am. But it was a great dynamic, I think, because we pushed one another to express. We never said no to one another about things. We were like, okay, how do we do it? How do we do it? How do we do it? Even when we decided to move to Chicago, we were dreamers. You know, we would sit and be like, what would it look like if we were in Chicago right now? Where would we be?
Love
we would
it.
Be reading a script in a coffee shop. It'd be snowing outside. Yes. Like we were manifestors of the worlds that we wanted to see ourselves in. And we learned really quickly in South Florida that we weren't going to be working there the way we wanted. We weren't models. There was a very set yeah. scene in South Florida of like, these are the actresses that work. And we didn't look like them. I'm 5'10". They didn't know what the freak to do with me over there. But then we kind of like decided we were going to leave and we were going to save this money to do it. And it happened very fast and we were here. And then from there, and I like to share this with people, especially duo creative partners, because this is where things go wrong with people is when they want to step outside of one another to do other things.
Yeah.
Wendy and I never let that completely freak the other out. It was like, we're only going to learn so much together. There needs to be that. I'm going to go do this for 2 years. I'm going to go do this for 2 years. And then we're going to come back together and try and create something and see what that learning, how it's changed you, what you've brought to the table new because of it.
Of course,
and yeah. it really worked for us to operate in that way. In the moment, yeah. it was a little scary. You know, you feel like, oh, am I losing my friend? Like she went and started, she was at Improv Olympic, IO Chicago, doing a lot of like house teams. I was a new mom. So I was home more, but doing a lot of like thinking of what kind of shows or I wanted to write with her yeah. and do with her. And when we came back together, there was a new skill set. And then we would hire the people to teach us the rest of it kind of deal. And that's how we did it. We just kept pushing yeah. along. And we also knew that we would have to tell the community how to view us because yes, we came here because yeah. we heard that there were no Latinos in Chicago and the ones that were there were working. And we're like, oh shit, that's where we got to go. But when we got here, it was like, hi, welcome. We will need you to assimilate fully in order to play in our spaces. And we were like, I don't get it. I don't know how to be like that. I'm from South Florida. Like, it ain't nothing like the Midwest. And Wendy's like from the Bronx, you know, and grew up in South Florida also. And so we were not Midwest at all. We didn't know, we were losing our spark trying to be like the white boys that we were playing with on stage. And they didn't know what to do. So when we wrote People in the City, and we spent a couple years writing it, we became, it was a two-woman show. We were inspired by Kathy Najimy and Mo Gaffney on Broadway with Parallel Lives. We were inspired by John Leguizamo and Mambo Mouth and Freak and all his shows. And we were like, we can bring our flavor, we can bring our joy, our sass to the stage, and show these people what we can do. And we did, and we played like 20 different characters each, men, women, everything. We had a ton of fun. And then people were like, oh, y'all are funny.
Like that, like, they would say it too. Yeah, they're like, you guys were actually funny.
You know, like, oh, you're actually really articulate, like that kind of shit.
Yeah. Even the critics, they would come see the show and then they would be like, you know, I didn't know what to expect out of Latina comedy. And you're like, why do you have to, do you say that about everyone?
Right.
But they wanted to see.
I'd love to hear it. Didn't know what
I don't know what they were trying.
Right. The magical realism. Yeah. We're like, no, it's just relatable. We do comedy that's relatable. And that's where we like to exist in. And people really dug it. We took it to New York. They dug it in New York. And we kept working on the show. We didn't fall into the trap of some
sketch artists that
kind of feel like they need to keep creating. I knew I didn't want to be on Saturday Night Live ultimately.
Even though we did audition.
Wendy also, we did audition. But that was the universe also telling us, like, we auditioned, but within the night of auditioning, we like our 10 minutes was stripped down to 5 minutes for both of us to work together. Like everything just kept going wrong. Sharna was like, what are you going to do? Be a single mother and work on Saturday Night Live? And I'm like, I don't know. No, I don't know. You just did things you felt like you had to do, but we knew that that wasn't going to be where we wanted to be because it was just another place where you would have to assimilate to a certain comedy standard. And we didn't want to do that. Ultimately, we wanted to make a new voice at the table. We wanted to make our own table. So yeah, that's
the snapshot.
That's kind of the loose journey, the snapshot of how we got together, but we stayed together. We kept working with one another. There's no better place for me on stage than to be with Wendy. I love it. I love, love, love working with her. And we'll probably joke about being in old people homes and still doing scenes and just mashing reality.
What are you saying? That's fantasy. For the lines. No, it's not.
You know,
it's like the Latino version of those two Muppets, the men in the dog.
Yeah. I think it's so, it's so beautiful. And I it's so important that we hear these stories of these collaborations and how they evolve. And I love that you talk about, you know, it is hard. It is hard. Growing together in any kind of relationship, you know, and making space for each other to grow. But I love that reality of like, it's about gathering as many of the tools as you can bring and going back to what you were saying about, you know, applying for the job at Teatro Vista. It's that life experience. It's that championing of each other. And it really feels like in an industry and a world, let's be honest, that does not want to see women, brown women, you know, anyone come together to support each other, right? That's been a value that you have led with from jump, from South Florida. I'm from Orlando, so I know about Florida, you know? So like, I'm like, oh yes, oh yes.
And, oh, yeah.
Florida.
I didn't know that.
Yes. Uh-huh. I didn't know
that. It's so beautiful. Oh, and thank you for sharing that story. Yes. I didn't know, yes. You know. And I think those are the kinds of stories that we need to hear more of. You know, we hear the chisme about how like they don't talk, right? But it's like this journey, this collective journey that you've taken together, and that value is so ingrained in how you seem to be approaching this job, this new job, and this seed that you're planting for this company and for the city and for the field. So thank you for sharing that. That's really beautiful.
Hey, thank you we love talking about ourselves. So this is awesome. this is great. We saw a lot of duos break up a lot and over just ego and things like that. And fear, you know, fear is a big driver of ego, and ego feeds on fear. And I think I can be really honest and transparent in saying there were times where Wendy's success made me feel like, oh my God, am I worth it? Like, she's moving ahead and she's doing these things, and I don't know if I'm as good or if I can compete, or if I'm holding her back or whatever. And, but it's like what happens on stage is undeniable. Yeah. And at some point you just have to say, that's the gift, you know, el don or whatever. And, and you just got to trust the universe that that's what you're meant to be doing in those spaces. And then you'll also be doing things outside of one another, and that's okay.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yes. Same here. You know, it's like, you know, Lorena got the role on Chicago Med, and I was like, oh, guess this is where it ends, you know, like you just you sort of think, you're like, I guess, you know, I mean, I'll always be here. I'm her daughter's godmother. She can't get rid of me, but all, I guess this is it, you know, but it never was it. And I think a lot of it is rooted in the fact that we take so much pride in learning. You know, after like 2 months on set, she was like, okay, I've been watching these directors. Okay. You know? And so she came with all of that. And then that inspired us to go into filmmaking and to write our pilots and to write. So it's like, never, you can be scared of what that might look like, but you never really know what that's gonna turn out to be. And that opened up another whole life for us. Yeah.
We had been taking our content to other people to shoot for us and capture, and then we would be unhappy with the result, and we would have poured money into it and been like, damn. So when I got that gig at Med, I did. NBC is incredible, at least on that particular set, of having let me just ask for something like, I want to follow directors and I want to learn from them. And they were like, ask them, and if they're cool with it, then you can do it. And just like us, directors love to talk about what they're doing in their process. And so they always said yes. And for 2 years, I was able to follow them. Wendy at that time took a filmmaking cohort
of women of color. Mm-hmm.
And learned how to produce and make films and that kind of. So when we came back together to make our first film together, Good Mothers, it was like, wow, we brought all of this learning to the table. And I was able to demystify what it was to be on set and to work with these directors that they're often white men in those positions. And you put them in this like status, you endow them with like the Oz thing, and what they say is what it is. And, you know, if you get a criticism, then you suck and probably don't deserve to be in the room. Like, that's the things that actors do. But it was wonderful to learn what that all really is and who those people really are, and how most of them just don't even have the language to talk to actors. They just don't. They didn't go to film school to study actors acting. They went to make films and do movies, right, and things. And some were considerate enough to learn how to talk to actors, but many do not know how. And so that's where you are like, I don't know how to deliver for this person. I must suck. And no, you don't. They just don't know how to talk to you. And that was great to be able to bring that to the community then and say, hey, you know, this is the way and this is the deal and you can do what you want and you can ask for what yeah. you need and it's okay and you're not going to get fired and no one's going to hate you. And then you spread it.
Yeah, I love it. I love it.
That, you know, again, that mentality of what you learn, you pass it down.
The two of you are so unstoppable and what an inspiration, I think, you know, as we're going into a new year and for all of our listeners, just to sort of hear, you know, that you have so many more gifts than the world wants to maybe tell you you do, you know, and to take those leaps and to take those leaps on yourself and to apply. You know what? Apply. Even if it says you have to have been doing it for 15 years, apply, because it's those ideas
yeah.
and it's those real world experiences. And it's those people in your corner, you know, who are there to help you reach new heights. So I love it.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of people, they call themselves actors, but I encourage people to find their artists, because your artists will keep you thriving in this industry. You're not always going to land the gig, but you can always make work. And when you're an artist, you just have this innate need to do that. And we've been asked by people, how do you do it? How'd you do it? How'd you make this art your like full-time gig? And the answer to that is that we were never actors alone. We were always artists and we always figured out ways. And you find the number that you need to survive a month, you know, like what's that number? A lot of us think it's a lot bigger than it actually is. I think when I sat down to find that number, it was like $4,000 a month. That's the baseline number so that I'd have to make that up doing my art somehow. But it wasn't $10,000. It wasn't $15,000 a month. It was $4,000 a month. And so how do I find those gigs and that job that can be flexible so I can do my art and do the corporate job to kind of live and then eventually let it go to do the art full time? No one teaches you that. No one talks to you about that. No.
And the universe takes care of you. You know, you hear so many folks like, I got to have this 9-to-5. And like, if I don't have this 9-to-5, I can't do the other thing. But you realize like the 9-to-5 says that they're going to be cool, but then they're not going to be cool. They're not cool when you got to go to your audition at 12:20, you know, and you're waiting in the casting room, like they're not going to be cool. And so like, you start to figure out like, how can I take that leap, you know? And it was conversation. I was like, Lolo, I think you can mm-hmm. do it, but it was scary. She was a single mom.
And it was a rough, you know, first year outside of that.
Yeah, it was, but the universe will take mm-hmm. care of you when you open that door for yourself, mm-hmm. Then your life makes space for those things. Mm-hmm. To come.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's so great. I'm just like, I'm feeling like the buzz. These are like perfect words for me to hear right now. In my life, and I'm very excited to eventually come and meet you all in person.
Yes,
I can't wait. I'm very excited for you to be here. I told Joey I was stalking them on social media, and I was like, I see that you're going to be at Northwestern. So we'll be happy to have you, Chicago.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Thank you both so much for taking the time to chat with us today. We are so appreciative. Time moves so quickly. Oh my goodness. Thank you so much. We will be sure to include like links in our description for this episode for folks to connect with Teatro Vista, with you all, to keep track of all the work, the incredible work that you're doing, and the amazing season that you have. I was already listening to bits of The Fifth World, which is already like fully out for people to check out, and I was like getting chills just like being able to listen to something like that. Oh, so cool. Thank you so much. And listeners, we will be right back. Welcome back, listeners. We've just wrapped up our interview with Wendy and Lorena. Wow. I don't know why I act amazed every time after having conversations with people, but like that was just like there was just so much joy and it would just the conversation just flowed so easily with that.
Yeah, it's so, you know, it's, I agree. It's been a minute since we've been able to record together.
Yes, that's right.
And so, you know, I was like feeling a little rusty before, but it's so lovely when, I think especially just these two, such a long history, and so beautiful to hear, you know, only the tip of their story, you know, and mm-hmm. to really see what like living by one's values is, you know, mm-hmm. like to really, like, I think we talk a lot about, and we hear a lot of people out there talking about like values. And just to hear two artists who've grappled so many challenges throughout their career and who leaned into their values and who live by them and are now sort of guiding a next generation for Teatro Vista. So, yeah. So nourishing.
Absolutely. And the thing that really stuck out to me the most is them highlighting, like, embracing all of who you are and like bringing that to the table and not being shy about it, you know, like literally every facet of yourself is like, that's what is needed when you're entering into spaces that typically have not been of service to someone like you, like yourself, like whoever you are, and how that creates relevance. You know, this is coming, I just started reading The Art of Relevance by Nina Simon. Mm-hmm. Literally just cracked it open last night and read the first like couple pages, but the thing that really already is like sticking out to me in reading this book is that she describes relevance as not being, as being the means to the end and not necessarily the end, that relevance is this key that unlocks the door to meaning for people. And I think when you show up with your whole self, which isn't easy, it's definitely not always easy and it takes a lot of courage. But when you allow yourself to embrace all of that and to kind of like be fearless and show up in all of your ness, that helps to create the meaning and like the things that you're doing, and creates the relevance. And I think, you know, as an individual, and then when you're, you know, if obviously when you're like a leader of an organization or co-leaders of an organization, like that also helps, you know, in being able to identify like what becomes relevant and how, you know, and also embracing the fluidity of the world and the way that everything is changing and how we create art and how we create access to art for people. Like it's changing very quickly. And I'm hoping that we can kind of like catch up to that a little bit, because it's feeling like it's a little bit of a slow burn. And I'm hoping that with so much like changeover that people are embracing that, the necessity to be a little bit more fluid in the way they think about art making.
Yeah, fluid and adaptive and, you know, more expansive. Please.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you all so much for tuning in for our first episode of 2022. We really appreciate you tuning in. Make sure you stay tuned, and we will be back with a couple more episodes here in season 3. Thanks for listening. Thank you for listening to Soul Talk. Soul Talk is a branch of the Soul Project, a national theater initiative dedicated to producing the work of Latinx playwrights in New York City and beyond. Co-hosted by David Mendizabal and Joey Reyes. Edited by Iris Zacarias. You can follow us at www.soulproject.org, on Instagram and Twitter at Soul Project NYC, and on Facebook at The Soul Project. Thank you for listening.